progress will always come from Demos, from we the people.
Greece has made a tremendous comeback. We've worked with them very closely.
The United States recognizes only one legitimate government of the Republic of Cyprus.
Nothing can break the spirit of the Greek people.
Long live the friendship between Greece and the United States of America. Ευχαριστώ. Thank you very much.
I'm Thanos Davelis, and this is The Greek Current. Kimberly Guilfoyle, the first woman to serve as U.S. ambassador to Greece, was sworn in this week and is expected in Athens soon. With the U.S.-Greece relationship at historic heights, Ambassador Guilfoyle is now in a position to take it a step further. Andy Zamanidis, HALC's executive director, joins me today as we take a closer look at both the opportunities and the potential pitfalls that Ambassador Guilfoyle needs to be aware of as she looks to add her mark to the bilateral relationship. Andy, great to have you back on with us.
Great to be back with you, Thano.
Andy, the last time we chatted on this show, the question on everyone's mind was, when is Kimberly Guilfoyle going to arrive in Greece? We now have that answer after Ambassador Guilfoyle's confirmation. Are we officially turning a new page in U.S.-Greek relations?
So I'm not sure we have exactly that answer, and I don't know how the government shutdown may affect her move. But since you are Thanos and I am Iron Man, we are at the end game. We know it will be soon. We are not officially yet turning a new page. When the ambassador gets there, presents her credentials, we will be. I mean, it's not only as kind of the formality of presenting credentials. I think she's going to have a sprint to the end of the year. We know she has at least one secretary visit coming up, the Secretary of Energy, right? She will have a high-level congressional delegation that's coming along with the Aspen Institute, and perhaps a strategic dialogue by the end of the year, which would bring Secretary Rubio to Greece, because it's Greece's turn, Athens's turn to host the strategic dialogue. So it will be a intense beginning for her, and we should expect it this month.
Andy, on Twitter or X, you talked about this new era being one of peril and promise for Ambassador Guilfoyle and U.S.-Greek ties. Let's start with a promise here first and be a little optimistic. Yeah. What are you excited about in the coming months and years?
Well, as we said, one of the things that she has to look forward to is this Secretary of Energy visit, which follows up the Secretary of Interior's visit, who also came in his capacity as the head of the Energy Dominance Council in the White House. And the energy partnership between Greece and the United States has been one of the highlights for the last 10 years. And let's remember that besides the search for new sources of energy, that American companies are leading the charge south of Crete, Exxon and Chevron. You have tremendous facilities that were built in Greece, including the interconnectors of the Balkans, the floating regasification units, storage units in Alexandroupolis. And if it wasn't for that infrastructure, who knows what kind of pressure Russia would have been able to bring to bear on Southeast Europe. There have been, and when we do our Delphi and DC conference, we've heard ambassadors from other countries saying that if it was not for Greece, Southeast Europe may have frozen in the initial winters after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So energy is a big deal. Her predecessors did amazing work on energy diplomacy. In fact, Ambassador Pite, who kind of kicked off this era, then became Assistant Secretary of State for Energy. Ambassador Tunis worked on the Northern Corridor. And I'd like to follow up on your excellent podcast with Elizabeth Economy on China and Greece. That gets to the maritime competition. China has overtaken the United States in the size of maritime fleet, in dominance in the maritime industry. The Trump administration seems intent on reversing that or stemming that tide. It needs Greece. Greece is the world's largest maritime superpower for being such a small country. Another great success under her predecessors, the DFC's incentivizing and helping develop the LFC and the shipyards. Greece can not only bring its own maritime fleet to bear, but help build ships to stem China's advantage in shipbuilding. Those are two big areas we can go with security. The MDCA, again, something you've covered a lot on the podcast, that's maybe America's greatest return on investment, because it really did not invest a lot. It did not invest when Pompeo did the first revision, did not invest a ton when Blinken did the second revision, both with then Foreign Minister then Diaz. But the United States got significant basing rights. And as we have discussed again, just like we talked about the energy infrastructure, if it were not for Alexandroupolis, how different would Russia's aggression against Ukraine have turned out? So those three big areas, there's people-to-people ties, there's economic commercial ties, but I think those three are immediate opportunities for her as high-level visits and renegotiations are due almost immediately.
Andy, let's talk about what Ambassador Guilfoyle needs to be wary of as she works to build on the best ever relationship between Greece and the U.S. that we've heard so much about. What do you see as the potential pitfalls here? Are you worried there are aspects of the relationship that really could be taken for granted?
Yeah. So first of all, don't take for granted Greece as a pillar of stability. That's something, again, something that former Ambassador Paya talked about. Ambassador Tsounis said, you know, that it's an indispensable partner. And both of those are true, but that should not be taken for granted. Greece has its own economic challenges. The cost of living, the inflation crisis in Greece is something that tempers a little bit the Greek economic miracle, which remains an unbelievable story that people should be celebrating. Political stability, given what we remember in Greece 10 years ago, is not something that should be taken for granted. And that's why the ambassador should be especially wary of people who are going to try to use her in internal Greek politics. She's the ambassador of the United States to the Hellenic Republic and not to certain figures. We see the memes even with the famous phone call by a former minister. Everybody is staking claims into Trump world. People trumpeting their Trump bona fides who were unknown, who are making up stories about tensions between the Mitsotakis government and the Trump administration, really making up stories, calling them Democrats, ignoring the fact that there have been high-level ministerial contacts. Even in this term, there have been interviews with definitely Trump-friendly outlets like Breitbart and Fox News Digital. So the ambassador has to be wary getting sucked into a game that could undermine Greece's stability. As you covered with Elizabeth Economy, also be wary of China. China is a competitor in Greece and Southeast Europe. And a lot of that is our own fault and the United States' fault, because when Greece was in the throes of its debt crisis and the Troika, within which the U.S. played a huge role, told Greece privatize the Port of Piraeus and then did not make a bid for the Port of Piraeus and now wants to reverse China's ownership of it. I'm not sure that's going to be easy, but that is going to be a peril as well. The wars to the north and south of Greece are a destabilizing factor, and frankly, probably deserves a separate analysis is Turkey and the role of its of some people in her own government.
Well, let's dig into Turkey, Andy, because it's something that has defined the tenures of previous ambassadors. And I'm thinking, you know, 1996 and the EMEA crisis, for example. But as the relationship deepens on multiple fronts between the U.S. and Greece, is the Turkey factor something that Ambassador Guilfoyle will really need to grapple with?
Undoubtedly. I mean, we've seen Turkey is still a destabilizing and kind of, let's quote another frequent podcast guest, Stephen Cook, is neither friend nor foe. We saw that even play out in the last week. Erdogan went to the White House, but just a few days before at the UN, he was a little bit trolling President Trump about not having ended wars. Erdogan said he made great progress, but then we heard Foreign Minister Fidan say, well, we really got nothing. People are trumpeting that Erdogan got nothing, but now Bloomberg is confirming that he may be getting off relatively lightly in the Halkbank case. So this remains a tortured relationship. I think the great challenge is for Ambassador Guilfoyle is that she's coming on later than her counterpart in Ankara. I would say in the last 10 years, both with Ambassadors Payet and Tsounis, the U.S. ambassador in Athens carried equal, if not greater, sway in Washington, D.C. I would say greater, but again, that's probably That's an analysis for an entirely different podcast. And Ambassador Barrick has had a head start on Ambassador Guilfoyle. He has an inter-bureaucratic advantage because he's also the special envoy for Syria. You see him popping up in Lebanon. You saw him even play some role in Armenia. So the bureaucratic support he gets from back home makes that early disadvantage greater. And he seems to be excusing and repeating everything his Turkish hosts say. He has to know that Turkey was the bad guy in the S-400, but maybe to mollify his hosts or to try to gain leverage with him, he's repeating publicly the lie that the United States did not want to sell the Patriots. The United States did offer the Patriots to Turkey. Turkey just wanted technology transfer. So if Tom Barrack is cheerleading for Turkey for whatever reasons he needs to make his jobs easier in Syria and elsewhere, will Ambassador Guilfoyle be able to push back now that when she gets in post and say the things she said during her confirmation hearing, which is, you know, Turkey is not a reliable ally. One ally is reliable, one is not. Will she be able to use a terminology that Ambassador Payet did during the previous Trump administration, where Turkey was violating Greek airspace and he criticized Turkish actions? And more importantly, will she be able to point out, because it doesn't seem that Ambassador Barrack was, when he spoke to reporters after the Erdogan visit, when they asked about Greece, and he says, I'll tell both of them to stop. I don't know what Greece is doing. Greece doesn't have a blue homeland doctrine. Greece is not occupying parts of Turkey. Greece is not challenging Turkey's sovereignty. So will she be able to do that, or will Barrack kind of outmuscle her?
Andy, as we've seen in the past, previous ambassadors, notably Jeff Pyatt and George Tsunis, had great relations on Capitol Hill. How should Congress factor into Guilfoyle's plan of action when she arrives in Athens?
She should build a lot of support there. We've seen the change in the relationship of Greece and in Eastern Mediterranean policy has been over and over led by Congress. And of course, her Secretary of State, one of her bosses, was part of that effort. And when the question of resources comes up, another big peril, it seems to not be on the top of everyone's mind yet, but we've seen this in previous hearing. There is a peril of the closing, a further reduction of force and the closing of the consulate in Thessaloniki, which would be a strategic disaster. She needs Congress to be her ally and really insist that State Department keeps Thessaloniki open. She needs Congress to realize the importance of the bases in the MDCA, and maybe in the next NDAA devote more resources, or in the Appropriations Act devote more resources to this forward U.S. presence in Greece. So Congress is going to be a tremendous key here for her.
Andy, thanks again for joining us. Always
thanks,
great
Donna.
Chatting. Taking us to our headlines for the day, Europe's top prosecutor warned on Thursday that EU farm funds and other subsidies are fueling corruption across the bloc, something that's been seen in Greece and Slovakia. EU farm subsidies are a tempting target for corruption schemes as they represent one-third of the entire EU budget. In order to deal with these cases, Europe's top prosecutor is seeking a bigger team both in Athens and elsewhere. Finally, a general strike paralyzed Greece on Wednesday as union protested labor law changes that include overtime that could stretch occasional shifts to 13 hours. Defending the measure, Prime Minister Mitsotakis said it would give young people who often work two jobs to make ends meet the ability to put in more hours for a single employer. The 13-hour day proposal is expected to be passed into law this month. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.